I've never had it so good and so on, but this man started sharing that my life is terrible and I want to blow my brains out. I don't know if I can take it anymore. And then the meeting continued and everybody just kept doing a gratitude meeting. I'm so glad I'm sober. And it's like, didn't you guys just hear what that guy said? And, you know, it made me think, because I've been in that situation, and there's nothing more awful than being in a bunch of AA fanatics and your life is a living hell and you have to listen to that, and you know what that's like. And so what I wanted to talk about, what do we do in that particular spot? I know for me, when I've had that particular moment, and I don't know how it happened, the first instinct I went is that I'm not doing my program right. I'm not going to enough, you know, am I going to enough meetings? Am I talking to my sponsor? Am I, you know, doing those AA things that I'm supposed to do? And then for me, I was, but I was still miserable. You know, it seemed, you know, in the morning, and that seemed the things that worked when I was newly sober weren't working anymore. Like just rolling out of bed and saying, please protect me for today, that would seem kind of carry me, lift me throughout the whole day, wasn't there anymore. And the discussions of my sponsors, who I normally consider to be inspiring, became more like a complaint session out of my mouth, and he was as tired of listening to it as I was. And so it made me think about what is wrong, and what's wrong of it seemed to be, you know, I was listening to a tape and it said, you know, you either you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, or you're not doing something that you should be doing. And when you look at your life that way, is there anything there that can be gleaned? And so part of it is I looked and I thought, really, I wasn't doing the things that I did when I was newly sober, really, with as much enthusiasm as I did then. And what I ended up doing is I ended up, you know, writing about what I was afraid of. I ended up starting my day, like it says on page, you know, I think it's 86, 87 in the beginning of the day. But I did those things for a few days and there wasn't any relief. But I just kept doing it anyway. And my thought was, this is stupid and it's not going to work. And then what happened out of me, one day I woke up and I was back the way that I wanted to be. And that's the way it was. And I don't have any kind of great insight of why. What was it? And so the topic I'd like to bring up is, has that ever been your case? What did you do? Share your experience, strength, and hope. There's microphones there along. The meeting's open to talk about this topic or any topic. Oh, I have a reading, sorry, from the big book. It says, this is from the Stories to Handle Sobriety. The reading is, God willing, we members of AA may never again have to deal with drinking, but we have to deal with sobriety every day. How do we do it? By learning through practicing the 12 steps and through sharing at meetings how to cope with the problems that we look to booze to solve back in our drinking days. For example, we are told in AA that we cannot afford resentments and self-pity, so we learn to avoid these festering mental attitudes. Similarly, we rid ourselves of guilt and remorse as we clean out the garbage from our minds through the fourth and fifth steps of our recovery program. We learn how to level out the emotional swings that got us into trouble both when we were up and when we were down. And that's the reading for the big book. Now the meeting is open for sharing for this topic or any topic related to the recovery from alcoholism. Microphone's right there.
Hi, my name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic, Bill.
Bill.
I'm here thinking that we have a fundamental basic problem here. When they said more will be revealed, that's true. And I talked about this the other day, so I hesitate to repeat myself in some way. But I'm alcoholic, and have been an alcoholic all my life. I've been in recovery
less than that considerably.
Certainly more than half that. But for the most part, life has been very well. I've done what I'm supposed to do, and I have been repaid by a life beyond my expectation. However, there have been occasions when, as the gentleman on the podium mentioned,
life suddenly, inexplicably, turned to shit. And I don't know if anyone else here has experienced, and I use the term clinical depression, but it is real. Clinical depression is as real as getting hit over the head with a baseball bat. 20 or 30 years ago, no more than that, Freud was God. And all you needed to take care of your problems, all you needed to achieve some level of stability and happiness in your life was find out why you wanted to have sex with your mother. Well, that has kind of gone by the wayside. Freud is certainly still a respected member of the psychiatric community, but the concept of being on that couch for an endless amount of time and certainly tremendous amounts of money is not going to guarantee any significant changes in your life or your lifestyle. AA, for all of its benefits, I mean, God, what can I say? But I happen to have drank myself into the business somewhat, and so for 30 years I watched people, and for a long time I was very fundamental. Your problem is you're not going to meetings. Your problem is you're not doing what you should be doing, or you're doing what you shouldn't be doing. And if you did that, life was going to change. And while they were doing this or not doing this, often they relapsed. Sometimes they blew their brains out. And so, I kept thinking, there's got to be a combination here. There has to be a way of accepting all of the benefits of Alcoholics Anonymous, but accepting also, and I accept, you know, I say, I, for some of you, I may be speaking heresy now, but for some people, for a brief as possible period of time, benefit from some appropriate form of medication. It will stop the pain of clinical depression. And there is nothing that I have ever experienced that is worse than that kind of depression. Winston spoke of it as the black dog, you know? And it is. You know, you don't care about anything. You don't want to do anything. You know, somebody said if the cure was over there where my coffee cup is, I wouldn't have the energy or the inclination to walk over and pick it up. So, and I've also seen people, so some judicious use of medication, I think, has some value. And some people go crazy and put everybody on meds, and you know, and that's bullshit too. And for some people, if you wait long enough, depression goes away. God, I've been 5-6 years now without any signs of clinical depression. I'm not taking any medication. Yeah, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, at least part of the time. And there's a lurking fear in the back of my mind that someday I may wake up and feel those tentacles of depression creeping back into my life. But not today. So it's possible that God can cure it, time can cure it, or in some cases,
judicious application of appropriate medication may have some salubrious effect. So all I know is that we have choices today. 50 years ago, we had no choices. I was remarking that as late as the 1940s, there was this wacko who used to do lobotomies. Guys go around the country doing lobotomies at mental hospitals on people, and was lauded as a hero, as someone who was doing good work. And he'd lay you down and take an ice pick and shove it under your eyelid into your brain and wiggle it around. By God, it did cure depression. you weren't much of a person afterwards, but you weren't very agitated. So more will be revealed. Who knows today? They talk about stem cells and they talk about this. God knows. I don't know. But I know for us, first and foremost, it has been the acceptance of our alcoholism and using the means of Alcoholics Anonymous to treat it or to deal with it or to find a new and better life. But like I say, there are some things now that we didn't have 50 years ago, and I have no idea what we're going to have 50 years from now, and I'd dearly love to be around to see it. I know that ain't possible. And I've been babbling, so I think I'll stop and let somebody else do it for a while.
Because I want to be a better Christian. I want to know everything it works. But I'm here to tell you, no matter where you go and what you study, your foundation, if you have what I have, which is alcoholism, better start here. It makes everything else possible. Other than that, you may not have a chance. I learned when I was in this program for only 3 weeks, and I learned from Clancy Imslin, from the people that didn't know who he is. And alcohol is not my problem. It was my solution. And I learned that if alcohol is my problem, all I gotta do is don't drink the damn stuff. And I'm fine. But it's when you quit drinking, sooner or later, your emotions are gonna get enough out of whack. You've got to drink in order to resolve your emotions. I learned that very quick. But you can see I don't have any emotions now. You know, I'm solid water. It isn't solid. And it may never be solid. But little by little, I learned to live in these meetings. And I learned this from Clint. And slowly I've learned to put a toe outside of these meetings. And I can sit here today and look at all of you, no matter who you are. I belong here. I belong out there. And I feel now the way I've always wanted to feel. Won't last all day. Something's going to piss me off. Something's going to do this. If there is a God, when it rains, he's raining on everybody's parade. And all I got to do is get through it. Patience. And that's not the only answer. Little by little, you learn in here how to solve these problems. If you drink, you cannot learn. You can't make it. I've seen people try to make it. But I don't have the answer for your problem. But it's in you. You've got to look inside. And it's hard when you start looking outside. And if you think that I'm going to start smiling and acting like I'm glad to see you today, not until I'm glad to see me. And I haven't got there yet. I've got to learn to be glad to see me in the morning. I don't even know what I look like. I don't think that way about myself. I care about how I feel. I realize I've had it. I've had money. I've had it. Thank you, Mr. Universe, all of us. And let me tell you this. It doesn't make any difference what you have. It's how you feel about what you have. And that's what it is. If you can get by, this one day at a time, I knew this shit would work when I came in here. 77. I couldn't do it one day at a time. I had to break it down to 1 hour at a time. Then to 5 minutes at a time. If I can get through the next 5 minutes, I made it. That's the way I have to do it. I don't suggest you get into it like I do. It took me 12 years to get 12 steps. But there's an answer. And this is your foundation. If you can get past this A&A, you've got a chance. That's how I feel every day. If I could just come here, not go to meetings anymore. If I could just come here and sit here and listen to her and listen to you, sooner or later, something comes up. And that gets me through the next hour or the next day. This thing works. It may not work for you all the time, because what you're talking about, depression, clinical depression, and things like that. But remember one thing, that's what the disease is about. Eventually your emotions are going to get so far out of whack, you've got to drink to resolve it. That's alcoholism. That's what I've got. And that's why most of us are here. It's not because we drink. Because a lot of people drink. They don't have anyone anywhere near the problems I do. That is that.
Lane Kennedy, alcoholic. I'm grateful to be sober today in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love your topic about emotional sobriety. And welcome to anybody that's new to Alcoholics Anonymous. I found emotional sobriety for sure. And I've also found that I don't have to get drunk anymore, which is a miracle. And I wanted to just kind of talk about my experience with emotional sobriety, because the longer I'm sober, it's definitely, it is about just living a day at a time. And what I do is I have to keep it really simple. I have to keep it really simple. And for me, that means I call a sponsor on a regular basis. And I know that as an alcoholic, I'm prone to lie. And I'm prone to be lazy. And I'm naturally depressed. I wake up in the morning and I just, you know, sometimes I don't have the will to go on. And you know, what I was taught in the first, I guess the first 5 years of my sobriety is to take contrary action. And that meant, for me, showing up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every day. And I think it was in that first 5 years of my sobriety that I learned how to live life differently. I got a home group, and that home group kept me sober. And today, you know, being sober a little bit longer, it's that home group that keeps my emotional sobriety in check. I show up there religiously every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Who wants to get up at 8 a.m. like on a Saturday? And you know, I work and I have a full life, and so Saturdays are kind of like sacred to me. But I what I learned is that, you know, this home group, they keep me honest and they keep me accountable. And I was told when I first got here, you know, Elaine, you're going to be able to do anything you want in recovery. I remember my sponsor saying this to me like it was yesterday. And I was like, wow, I can do anything. That's fab. And like, sky's the limit. I was thinking robbing a bank, and I was like, just, I was insane. So, you know, and then she said, but you're going to be accountable for every action that you take. And so my emotional sobriety is about being accountable for all my actions. You know, and that home group and my sponsor keep me accountable. And, you know, they know when I'm lying. They know when I'm not showing up on time. They know when I'm not answering the phone. They know. So I'm really glad that, you know, I have this foundation that was given to me by Alcoholics Anonymous to keep me straight, so to speak. And, you know, without my emotional sobriety, without Alcoholics Anonymous, I have nothing. You know, I'm out on the road flipping people off and saying the F word. So, you know, it's a lot of work sometimes. You know, like I said, just getting out of bed is a lot of work. But I do know that if I am, you know, taking that contrary action and being accountable, then my life is pretty smooth. And I know that I got sober to not have the insanity. You know, I didn't want to wake up drunk anymore. And I didn't want to be, you know, snorting white powder anymore. So, you know, as long as I show up at meetings and I'm staying honest with my sponsor and my home group, I feel like I'm emotionally fit, and I'm able to go out into the world, and that's awesome. That's really cool. So thank you for your topic and for being here at the conference, and it's nice to see you after many years. Thanks.
My name is Charlie. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Charles, for taking over the meeting on very short notice. Depression. I don't think I've ever been depressed. I only drank a very short time before I came into the program. I drank probably about 45, 47 years or so. And it was very easy for me to get in the program. Very, very simple. I got home one night and there was a notice on the board that said, "The boss wants to see you at 8 a.m. What does he want? So I went to see him at 8 a.m. And the first thing out of his mouth was, "Some of the fellows think you're drinking too much." I didn't say it to him, but I said it to myself. "Tell me something I don't know." And he said, "We're sending you out to guest house for evaluation." In case you don't know, guest house is a place out near Detroit in a place called Lake Orion. And it's specifically for priests and religious men. Now they have one for women, religious. The greatest thing, next to my ordination, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I had a great life, a real good life, there's no question about it. I had a good education, came from a nice family, nothing special. We were dirt poor, and grew up during the Depression. And I was throwing it all away. The thing that gets me, though, is I didn't realize it. Old John Barleycorn, as sneaky as he is, was ruining my whole life and ruining anyone else that came near me. But I didn't realize it until my boss called me in and said, "Bingo, you're going out for evaluation. And you're going out there for 3 months. Not 3 hours, not 3 weeks. You're going out for 3 months. Some people do a little more than 3 months, but no one does less than 3 months. That's the way the program works." And I repeat myself, next to my ordination, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And when I first got into the program, it was a little difficult to get to meetings because I lived in Renon. It was a 9-hour bus ride to get to Bangkok. And what I did was, on Friday night, I used to get the bus, get up for Saturday afternoon meeting, get this bus on Saturday night, and get back to Renon to get into school the following week. So when I tell people in the United States that, well, you know, here in the United States, if you don't like this meeting, well, go down the road a piece. There's another meeting going on there, and whether you were in Boston or Detroit or even Cleveland. But in Thailand, especially in those days, there were very few meetings. In fact, I don't think there was a meeting every single day in Bangkok at the time. It might have been 7 meetings, but anyway, that's what I did. I did that for a number of years, and that's how I stayed sober. But I, as I said, when I opened up my talk, I was never depressed. I think it's against my nature. I don't know what it is. The only thing I didn't like was the fact, I repeat myself, I had a real good life, good education, and I was throwing it all away. Didn't even know it. Until my superior said, "The boys think you're drinking too much, and we're sending you off for evaluation." And that was the greatest thing that happened to me, was going out to guest house. I found out who Charlie Dolan was, and because of the AA program, I found out how to change my life around. I had to do a 180, no question about it. And I was able to do that because of the AA program, you people. I remember up in Bangkok at Holy Redeemer, the people coming out of an AA meeting. I had no idea what AA was. I knew the words Alcoholic Anonymous, but I didn't know the program. Didn't have a clue about it. But these fellows came out of there, you know, they were all smiling, their eyes were working, it was shining. And I remember one fellow come out and I said, "Gee," I said, "this guy owns a nice restaurant. What's he doing in AA?" And my heart went out to them because they couldn't drink. They couldn't hold their liquor. And I felt sorry for them. Without realizing that they were feeling sorry for me. But because of this wonderful program we're here today, I'm very fortunate. It just so happened, and nothing to do with it, when I first got into the program out in guest house, I was there probably 6 weeks. And the desire to drink was completely taken away from me. It was 100% gift. I certainly didn't deserve it, but it was 100% gift, the desire to drink. And I remember We're playing Pinochle one night, and the bishop, he's legally blind, but he was kibitzing, and one of the fellows passed him over a shot glass of Bailey's Irish Cream across the table to the bishop. And I could get the aroma of alcohol. It was so strong. And I said to myself, when I was drinking, I never knew there was alcohol in Bailey's Irish Cream. It was so weak. And here it is, it passed across the table from me, and it was so powerful. The change of life. Just amazing. And how I came to realize what alcohol was doing to me. Because of AA, I'm alive today. If I did not get into AA, I'm sure I wouldn't be alive today. If I were alive, I'd be in the gutter someplace. Because I was just throwing my whole life away. And because of this wonderful program, and I was very fortunate when I got through the guest house, the 3 months out there, they had I don't know what you call it, you go back for a fresher course, and I was able to do that because it's still in the States. And then, once they started the Thai Roundup, I've always been in Thailand. Until my boss pulled me out. Now this is very simple. I was in the United States. My superior was in the United States at the time, when the fellow in the office in the United States died. And he said to me, Charlie, would you please go in the office temporarily till we get this thing straightened out? And I said, sure, what the heck? You're the boss? No problem. He says, only temporarily. It was 5 years ago. And I said to him, I said, look, I said, anything you want, I'll do. If you want me to stay in the office, fine, but I have two requests. I keep my residence in Thailand, get that lady out of the office. And he looked at me right in the eye and he said, I've already thought of both things. There was a young lady, she was a very, very good person. She was helping the fellow who was sick, who was running the office. He was very, very sick. And he died of cancer, and about less than a half a year later, that secretary died of the same cancer. There's just no connection, but I was saying more prayers for her than I was saying my divine office, because she was really suffering, really suffering. But anyway, because of you people, the AA program, I'm alive today, and I'm very, very grateful. My name is Charlie, and I'm still an alcoholic.
Well, I'm going to share. My name is Hank, and I'm a drunk. And I have 17 years of sobriety. And for the last 3 or 4 months, I've been crying every meeting. So I hope I don't cry, but if I do, that's how it is. So emotional sobriety, I don't know. I've been a tough guy all my life, and I've never cried before. I'm happy, joyous, and free. I don't believe in depression, and I've never had it. So I bear with you, and I feel sorry for you. So I know what it's like a little bit, but I don't have depression very often. I stay with happy, joyous, and free. It's on page 133, and it's because God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's enough for me. I study it. I read it every day. I read page 86 every night and every morning, in retiring and awakening in the morning. And I believe in love and tolerance. That's my program. You know, I feel for everyone that's in here and everyone that comes around and shares. That's the meaning of the word of God to me. That's the sharing from their experience, strength, and hope that gives me the courage to keep forward. I'm a drunk. I'm a fall-down drunk. I've been drinking all my life. I don't drink anymore. That's a gift from the program and from all the people here that have shared. The gift of not drinking, not waking up suffering, and not having that desire for a drink. The drink that used to drive you out of your house and drive you out of your neighborhood to go down to the bar and have a drink every day, 24 hours a day. I was a 12-hour drinker every day, 12 hours. You get up and go to work and then go back and drink. I was a filthy, no good for nothing, low life drunk. I don't do that no more. I haven't done that for 17 years. And alcohol is not my problem today. But I guarantee if I drink, it'll be my problem. Yeah. Guaranteed. There's no doubt that I've been down that misery. I don't want to go back there. I want to stay with happy, joyous, and free. I want to stay on page 133. I want to stay on page 86. I want to stay on page 15. I want to read the book every day. because that's where the truth is. That's where the truth of the disease is. That's what tells me who I was and where I am today.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ellen. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sorry, I'm from Australia. So I was beginning to think I was in America. I haven't heard any other voice on the American since I arrived. I come from Queensland in Australia. I was born in Ireland, so I have a degree in alcoholism. My grandfather and father, and on both sides, alcoholics. So I grew up with very little living skills, and a speaker spoke this morning about being in a dream, and I was in a dream most of my life. I didn't get to school because I came from a big Catholic family and had to look after the kids while Mum stayed in bed because she was depressed all the time. And so I got into my father's booze. He used to make his own, from hops, he'd make this kind of beer or cider or whatever it was. And I didn't know it was alcohol, but it did taste well for me. And I drank my mother's sherries and I did all that sort of stuff. But I was in AA a long time when I'm nearly 17 years sober this time. And I didn't take that into consideration. I thought my first drink was 19 in Dublin when I had a blackout, but it wasn't. I was drinking from very young. So it felt good and it probably helped me to survive and live. But I had, I know the topics on emotional sobriety and it's really fabulous. And I came into AA and I had one emotion, rage. That was the only emotion I had. And I was a very nice person when I was sober, which wasn't very often, but I was really nice. And I seen myself as this, because I was such a good Catholic girl, I had been. I had now let that go because it wasn't the right way. And alcohol was my God. And so I see myself as a bit of a Holy Mary, you know. So I didn't see the negative side of myself. I couldn't. I was in this dream state. And so I came in, and I came in this last time. I was a bender drinker. I came in on an emotional downer. So I got in then. And I straight away got counseling when I came in. I didn't go to we call it rehab in Australia, but you guys call it treatment. I never heard it called that before. I could have in 85 gone there because I was very bad, but by the time I had spent 6 years trying to get sober and I had tried every religion possible and sat on mountains and sat in ashrams and had a guru, everything. I was as mad as a mihack. So I came in and I couldn't even, I was a religious mad as well as, I didn't know it. So I was quite sick when I came in, but physically quite well. And because I wasn't drinking as much as I had been. Anyhow, I started to deal with my emotions and look at my family of origin and really look at what had happened to me, what was my life, what was going on, and it was such a shock because I seen my father as a really fabulous man, and I couldn't see what was the elephant in the lounge. I never looked at that. I just stepped around it, and I was in total denial about my life and everyone around me. And I began to look. And the first time this counselor put my family of origin up on a board and showed what it was like and showed what was happening to me, then I had stepped out of that board. And my 12 brothers and sisters and mom and dad were still in there, but the boat was rocking now, and they were desperately trying to get me back in there because they didn't want their boat rocking. So I was up against this. They didn't want me. They said, there's nothing wrong with you. You're okay. And but I wasn't okay. Anyhow, I kept out of the boat and I kept looking at myself, and I have a really good feeling about myself today. And I have a very nice... what's happening with me, because I was so severely abused, my body was numb. But I have... my body's not numb anymore. I'm able to like my body, feel my body. And that is as a result of accepting who I am and accepting my emotions, myself as a spiritual being in a body. And so I'm really... enjoying life, and I used to do a lot of flirting, a lot of negative, I seen sex as very lust. It wasn't love. I now have an understanding of the difference. What I had to learn, everything for me was a learning. I even had to learn to clean house, wash up. Nothing I had learned in my home, any total, just drudgery. So I had to relearn all that. So there was an enormous amount of learning for me, but I find that I'm really happy, and I have two daughters and four grandchildren. And my eldest daughter was taken from me by my alcoholic husband, and he hid out with her for 18 and a half years. So her relationship with me is not so good. But my youngest daughter and I have a wonderful relationship, and I have these two little grandsons. They're the love of my life, and they have taught me to love these little kids. They just love me so much, and I'm a child with them. I play with them, and I have a lovely time. And I can see the way I can be with these two little children, these two little boys. And I could never be like that with my daughters. I pushed them away. I didn't know how to show them love. And I'm so delighted that God has given me the gift of being able to love my children, my grandchildren, because I wasn't able to love my daughters. And I'm able to show some of that love to my sponsees, and they tell me they love me, and it's a lovely feeling. So it just goes out and spreads out. Whereas before, I remember I used to have these awful feelings around me. If someone looked at me, I threw out all these negative to them. Now I don't have that. I don't deal with life in a negative way. I really enjoy life, and I enjoy AA, and I'm happy to be here. I just arrived last night. I'm really tired. So thank you all for being here. Bye.
Okay, that's all the time. That's all the time we have available for today. We have to get the room ready. We're going to have a keynote speaker next, which will be quite exciting. Sorry, sir, I didn't get your name. Could you do the closing reading for us, please?
Yeah. I was looking at the vision. I had to make a choice. And the vision for you, the last few lines, are appropriate to our situation. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us and to you. Ask Him
simple thing. The answers will come. If your own house is in order, but your relationship with me is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage in your past. Give freely of what you find and join it. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you.
Fantastic. Okay, and just one announcement. There's a camera was left at the registration table, if this is yours. And let's close the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Good.